This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It is your boy again, back with another episode of A Lost Plot. As always, it's Maverick here with our wonderful guest back again. Welcome, Avalon.
Hello, hola, konnichiwa, and leho.
We never get tired of him. He's
It almost sounds like you're getting tired of me.
No, not at all. No. We love to have his input, and as always, he has great things to say. So today we are reviewing the recent release, Napoleon, a 2023 epic historical drama written by David Scarpa and directed by Ridley Scott. It stars Joaquin Phoenix as the great Napoleon Bonaparte, Vanessa Kirby as Empress Josephine, yes, Tahar Rahim as Paul Burris, one of the politicians in the movie, and more. But before we get into the rating and everything else that goes into this movie, Avalon, give us the summary.
Well, I mean, the summary is this is a look at Napoleon's life, starting kind of from when he becomes a general within the French military, which is roughly around the French Revolution. That's kind of the implied thing. It's like it's at the, like, I guess. Well, like, anyways, it's like it shows his life from that point to essentially his death.
Pretty much it. If you know anything about the historical character of Napoleon, it pretty much follows his life story and everything that goes into who he is. So, yeah.
I mean, he's definitely one of those characters that most people around the world knows who he is. In fact, some of his major, like, life events, most people could probably are familiar with on a certain level.
With that in mind, what did you think of this movie? On a scale of 0 to 9, what would you give this?
Okay, I'm going to say 3.6 because the rating system did something really weird for me this time, where it did like a 3.5999999, like almost infinite.
Interesting.
I don't know how it did that, so I'm just going to say 3.6. It utterly confused me how that happened, but I guess somehow it got a...
I'm really curious too. On the side, actually, if you would forward that to me when we're done here, that way I can see how you rated it. I might be able to parse that out because I have no idea how that happened either. But 3.6 is pretty close to what I got, considering that I got a 3.55.
My word.
So this is probably the closest rating we have gotten to date. We'll see where exactly we matched up. But because this is such a character-centric movie, I wanted to focus on the character of Napoleon Bonaparte right to start. So as the main character, did you think that he was a compellingly flawed character in this movie?
So flawed, yes. Compelling, debatable. That's what I'll say. He's definitely arrogant. He definitely has his own, like, flaws, but he's also very smart. He's also, like, a military genius in some regards. Like, it showcases again and again the military battles he's in, and he's clearly knows what he's doing. But, I mean, as a whole, like, I mean, in a way, he's very well developed for most parts of his character. He's well developed. But as far as compelling, like, I didn't see, like, have an emotional or compelling reason to root for Napoleon, if that makes sense, from the get-go.
Right.
Like, he's kind of this character you're introduced to, and you're not really given a whole lot of, like, oh, like, good reason to, like, oh, he's the good guy, he's the hero you want to root for to succeed or whatever. It's not like the movie gives you a whole lot of foundation for that.
Sure, and that's an interesting point. I think because... And it's great that we're getting right on this right off the bat, because this movie, in some ways, and this is part of the problem, I'm sure we'll get into it more as the story progresses, but this movie is so character-centric that it is very focused on following his life. throughout the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And because of that, the idea of a cohesive storyline around a clear goal or objective isn't very clear because they try to balance all aspects of his life equally in the story. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at, okay, is this a story about his conquering? Is this a story about his romantic life? Is this a story about him returning to take over France, right? And his political endeavors? In a sense, the answer is yes to all of those because it's all aspects of his life rather than focusing on a specific thing that he is trying to achieve and everything else being subplots like it would in a normal story. Everything is kind of the same, like weighted the same in this movie.
Yeah.
So as a result, I think the goal of that is to show that he is the primary character in this story, right? And it's all about him. And so it's so character-centric that how he is developed as a person is important. Is he a compelling character? And I think that that's a good question to raise. How would you say in regards to... Let's compare this maybe to a different movie, right? So, clearly, if you've not watched this movie, there's a couple things going for it. If you saw my 30-second summary, it's got some epic battle scenes. Very impressive. There are some things that are worth considering if you're going to watch this movie. Probably watch it before you continue on. As always, there are spoilers. We're going to plow right ahead. This movie, let's compare it to, for example, in the time of the season, A Christmas Carol. So that's a movie about a terrible man who is despicable, hated in all these ways. And yet, in some ways, this movie still is considered a classic because it tugs at your heartstrings and shows a character who is compelling in his own way. So I guess my question is, how is the Christmas Carol Ebenezer Scrooge a compelling character versus this Napoleon? How is he not a compelling character?
Well, one thing you could say for sure about Ebenezer Scrooge, and this isn't like, if you're going to say the overarching story, his character does change. Like there are moments of change, things where the character is clearly learning, rethinking his position. And as a character, like, you just see, like, human emotions, more or less, peeking through, like, the hard, like, cynical, like, gruff exterior of Ebenezer Scrooge. So, I mean, in that regard, I mean, he's a character who changes quite a bit. And Napoleon maybe changes a little bit, but I don't know if he changes a whole lot over the course of the story. And in different ways he changes, like, maybe in regards to Josephine. But he's still kind of, like, from beginning to end, he still kind of maintains, like, his, like, I am the master of the battlefield kind of thing. Where it's, like, he doesn't really change in that perspective. He doesn't change as far as, like, his perspective on certain things. He still kind of maintains that he's this rude person to other countries and diplomats and characters, kind of exerting his control and power over them. So yeah, I don't know. I think maybe that's the biggest thing that comes to mind. It's like, he doesn't have a whole lot of change in this movie as a character.
Honestly, that's what I think of first when I'm watching the movie too. I think you're making a really good point. I mean, Napoleon is they almost paint him as initially this character who's very ambitious, almost to a fault, that everything else falls to the wayside in regards to his ability to pursue what he wants in life. And he's incredibly ambitious, incredibly brash, incredibly jealous, and that drives everything that he does, right? And so when you look at him at the beginning and you look at him at the end, he's a completely the same person, regardless of what happens. And so I think in regards to great stories, you're looking at a... You know, when you're looking at movies, even let's bring another example in, for example, right? The Social Network, right? There's a sense in which that movie is interesting in a whole different regard, which it would be worth having its own review of. But The Social Network is all about why am I blanking on his name all of a sudden? Yeah, that's right. Mark Zuckerberg. So Mark Zuckerberg and his rise in the Facebook world and how he works with the people who he was interacting with at the time to create the social network known as Facebook and all of that stuff, right? And whether or not you like Mark Zuckerberg, it paints him in a specific light in that movie and all that good stuff. But the ideas, oh, okay, well, now I've lost my point. That's awesome. And trying to remember Mark Zuckerberg's name, I forgot the actual point of what I was trying to bring up. Mm-hmm. Let me try to remember that for a second.
Well, actually, I just thought of something that maybe explains why the character doesn't change so much. I feel like the filmmakers and storytellers, when they were making this movie, they were so focused on making Napoleon this like stoic epic character. Like they're just focused on what he was, like who he is in the like consciousness of like people's minds, I guess, that they didn't focus on his human aspects perhaps as much. Like they downplayed those to a degree, perhaps. Like maybe it was all about like making him this like trying to hype up the epic part of it and like distancing him from everyone else.
Yeah, that he was dehumanized because he was so epic, way up here compared to everyone that we actually know and understand.
Yeah. So, like, it kind of just created this, like, apathy, like, with the audience. So it's, like, almost like you don't care about his character as much because he's so far removed from everyone. Like, he's not someone you want to root for, per se, because he's supposed to be this character you look up to for some reason. Though, in the process of doing that, we're not really given a whole lot of reason to look up to him aside from his military prowess.
Right. So let's compare that for a second to, let's just say, Marvel characters. And maybe expand on this as I'm just thinking this through as you're talking, right? Because that's a really interesting point. The Marvel characters, oftentimes nowadays, are also in a similar way separated from us. And that they are so powerful and so beyond our comprehension that it's very hard to relate to them. Now, Marvel tries to bring it back to us by having some sort of emotional connection, right? And let's just talk about the Marvels as an example, because that's the most recent one that comes to mind that released a couple weeks ago and is bombing as is appropriate. I'm not a fan of Marvel as a whole. Anyways, in case you did not know, in that movie, they tried to bring about an emotional response by connecting the Marvel characters to this internal struggle that Captain Marvel has and this interaction between Miss Marvel and the Rhodes. I forget what the girl's name is, who's the third person there. Anyways, they're trying to create an emotional connection, but it's so quick and so inauthentic that it's hard to truly believe them. And then you just pass on and move on from that, and you still don't connect to them. And they go back to their epic battle scenes and epic reactions to everything, and you're still distanced in a way that you don't really care because you don't truly understand them as characters. Would you say there's a similar thing going on here, or would you say that it's in a different vein?
I mean, I don't think you're wrong to choose the superhero genre, but I'm not sure I'd have chosen the Marvels, because with the Marvels, they did make an attempt, I feel like, more of an attempt to connect, but it was poorly done.
Oh, you mean compared to Napoleon, right?
Yeah, compared to Napoleon. Like, if you're going to use a good example, I would use Justice League, like, as an example, because the heroes in Justice League, like, the heroes are so far removed. Like, very few of them are relatable characters in some regard. They're just these mythic powerhouses that are, like, above everyone else. And most of them don't even change over the course of the movie. It's just... So, I mean, like, it's a very similar thing here between Napoleon and them.
Gotcha. And now I've... as much as I love movies, I've actually not seen Justice League. Sometimes I distance myself from movies because I don't have a reason to waste my time. Would you say that you walked away from that movie with a similar experience compared to this movie?
In some regard, I mean, Justice League had other problems as well, but I mean, as far as characters go, yes, I'd say similar as far as characters go.
Yeah, it's I think the epic point is definitely worth considering. I'm not fully convinced that that's the issue, partially because,
well, I mean, it's not just the epic thing. I don't think it's the only problem with Napoleon, but I just, that's, we're talking about the character, like, this is one of the problems of the movie, so.
Right, and I think that definitely in regards to the epic side of it, the most of the movie does go on in that vein in regards to these epic battles, like I was saying earlier, or the brilliant tactician that we're dealing with, or the politician that we're dealing with. We're dealing with a man who's very brilliant in a lot of ways and very ambitious. But then at the same time, I think there was a sense in which the romantic relationship with, which, love it or hate it, it showed a lot more of a human side of Napoleon in regards to just his jealousy and his utter frustrations with things not going well in regards to his romantic life. So there's, I think there's that aspect that was maybe not fully relatable, but it was definitely, I think a lot of people could relate to the frustration with other people at the very least, whether or not you're married, you can be really pissed off at someone and just not want to deal with them right now. You know, even those small things, like those are a little more relatable, but as a whole, yeah, the movie is, the character is not the most relatable character at the very least. And beyond that, he doesn't grow as a character, which I think is probably the biggest thing that comes to my mind is that, and that was the point that I was trying to bring up with The Social Network, is that at the end of the day, you see Mark Zuckerberg go from one end to another end, and all these things go on, and you see him in some ways change as a person. Maybe a little bit for the worse, according to the painting of that movie. I don't actually know Mark, so I can't say if he's a good or bad person. But it paints him in such a light that he changes in that way. In addition, he's actually created something in this time where he has created this business and he's done all these things. So there are multiple end result actions, I guess, in that movie versus this movie where you have him start at the beginning with nothing. He does all of these epic things, and at the end he ends with nothing. And he really is almost, I mean, he's looking for glory at the beginning of the movie. He's looking for glory at the end of the movie. Like, it's really hard to make a justification for who he is as a person any different than who he is at the beginning of the movie. And it's a little, I guess, frustrating to see as a analyst of stories like I am myself. I found that very frustrating to watch, and it makes him kind of look like a loser, to be honest.
Maybe we're not given a whole lot of, like, kind of going to the story, like kind of the story goal, but not really. Like, what is, like, Napoleon's desire, I guess? Like, what is he fighting for? They could have made that more compelling. Like, they could have focused on that and shown, like, what he wants, because you get the impression at certain scenes that he is a patriot for France, but at the same time, like, they don't develop that. They just kind of, like, hint at it, or, like, have these, like, short, like, dialogue scenes that kind of have him saying that. So it's like,
right,
if they developed more of, like, his desires, like, showcase, like, okay, this is what he's fighting for, and given us a reason to want to see that, maybe would have helped his character a whole lot more, given us more reason to empathize with him.
Right.
But we're not.
Now, you actually made a very good point, which made me think of another comparison. And I think comparisons are valuable, because it helps us to see how could they have done this differently and made it more compelling, right?
Yeah.
And so in this experience of Napoleon, you're looking at someone who is very ambitious, but you're not clear why, right? And so Napoleon, at the beginning, and you make a good point that he says that he is doing this for the sake of France and all this stuff, but his actions and the words that people around him are saying indicate that it's very selfish. in that the at the very beginning of the movie, they say, oh, he's an ambitious young lieutenant or whatever he was at the time, and he's rising in the ranks. Like, let's consider him for this promotion or for fighting this specific battle, right? Mm-hmm. And then later on, you know, he says he's fighting for France, but at the same time, he's crowning himself emperor, which is kind of the definition of the most egotistical move you can make in all of your life, right? When you choose to take it out of the, especially in a very Christian society at that time, to crown yourself king rather than have the symbol of God at the time, the Pope, crown you king. That's like a very egotistic, that's like the definition of the most egotistical move you can make ever. So it's very hard to make the case that he wasn't doing this for selfish ambition. Compare this to the very, also very recent release of The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, where you have a also very ambitious character who is in some ways also acting very selfishly for his own ends and for his own means, but he also has other compelling reasons for doing what he's doing, and that he's trying to save his family. He's trying to provide for them. He's trying to save this girl that he's mentoring, all these other things that also tie in. And that goes to the definition of a great character, is that they're complex and they have great reasons and maybe not so great reasons for doing what they're doing. And that is part of what makes that movie far more compelling, in my opinion, than this movie. Because in this movie, it, even if he says he's working for France, every action in the movie says otherwise.
Yeah. No, and that's what I kind of meant. It was like, it's more like about him. It's more about his character and less about what he's fighting for, what he's was trying to accomplish in his life.
Hey, everyone. Quick note. Hope you're all enjoying the podcast. Before we get back to it, would love to get some feedback from you for us. That's right. We're looking for reviews. If you could just give us 5 seconds of your time, hit the little stars in the app that you're listening to it on right now, or give us a thumbs up if you're listening to us on YouTube or one of the other platforms such as that. Anyways, appreciate you guys' time helping us out, helping you guys get more of this great content. Now, back to the show. So you would say that he was flawed, but he wasn't compellingly flawed. I think that's an interesting point, because I don't know what you gave him on or gave the movie on this, but I gave it 4 points in this. And this is one of the few things that I gave it 4 points on.
Partially for the opening scene?
Yeah. Partially because I thought that the opener...
Well, no, the opening scene is one of the best things about this movie in some regards, because it fully establishes the time period, the place, and it establishes like what is going on, the mood of France, like the chaos. Like it just establishes this is the French Revolution. Like this is the period we're in France. This is what's going on. And like, I mean, it's a pretty brutal, bloody scene we're shown with like essentially the aristocracy getting their heads chopped off in a violent fashion. It's
Marie
like
Antoinette getting the guillotine. Yeah. It's pretty, pretty crazy.
Yep. No, I mean, it's quite memorable, and it's like, okay, this is a great way to start a movie off, like give the audience an idea, like this is where we are, this is where the story starts.
Right. And I will say, I do not do well with blood. I did CPR training when I was in college and almost fainted when they were teaching us how to deal with blood in an open wound. So I am, and it was fake blood. So I'm not good with blood. But this movie is very bloody, especially at the start when it shows the guillotine. But they do it so well for in regards to how they showed it, where they cut off the head and then the executioner holds the head up in front of the audience. Right. And that, I don't think I will forget that, just because I can't imagine it looking any different with the blood pouring out of the head and all these other things. It's very graphic, but it's a very, like, if I can't imagine a guillotine in any other way now, just because that is such a strong visual representation, which in my mind very likely was how it actually was. So
no, it's probably very historically accurate how those happened, like how the French Revolution was carried out and how the masses were shown the execution of the people above them, people right. they hated.
Right. Yeah. And as another side, when they had Robespierre earlier on shoot himself, I was like, oh, he didn't die that way. I was thinking that in the movie, because I know a little bit. I don't know a ton about the French Revolution, but I know a little bit. I was like, oh, he didn't die that way. And it turns out he did die. And they're like, to the guillotine. And I'm like, oh, okay, that was a good move. They were, it seemed like they were relatively closely following his actual life. I read some things online where it looks like he didn't meet with, for example, the general from England and things like that. So it wasn't perfectly throughout the movie to the chronology of what actually happened. But as a general rule, especially in regards to the most important events, it sounds like they followed most of that pretty well.
Yeah, so right, I think
that was a good point of the movie. Going back to the beginning of the movie, like we were talking about, it paints it very well at the beginning. It catches your attention. The main character, and I want to bring this back because I'm sure we'll bring it back even again later in this podcast. But the main character being compellingly flawed, I think that it started off on the right foot. And it made him a character who was very arrogant and ambitious, but also jealous, prone to flying off the handle, all that kind of stuff. And it started in the right direction to move it toward a good movie. But they just didn't capitalize on anything they set out and didn't lay other foundational frameworks like having a compelling reason for being involved in the plot, like having something they really strive for that's valuable. And we can get to that in just a second, but side characters, I just want to touch on that briefly. What did you think of the side characters?
Side characters, some are better, more developed than others. I mean, it feels like this seems to be the case in many movies we watch these days. Like, some are given more development than others. But the other problem with this movie, perhaps, is that most of the side characters, they're only there briefly. Like, you only see them for a few minutes, and then you don't really see them again. Or you see them for a little bit here and there. Like, because it's like this historical movie. So it's almost like some characters, like, only there at the beginning of the movie. They don't show up throughout the rest of the movie. It's like,
right.
There's very little consistency with the side characters. So, I mean, I guess in that regard, they didn't need to develop some of them. But then they're also not memorable, some of them. They just, like, pop in, pop out, disappear. Now, there are a few characters who stand out, but, I mean, what was the guy from Austria, the diplomat guy from Austria? Like, he kept showing up, and maybe that's why
I thought he was the diplomat for Russia, specifically.
Or something, where it's like, yeah, he...
But he was a diplomat, yeah,
like,
you're right.
He kept showing scenes of him in the back rooms with, like, talking with some other dignitaries and such, like talking about Napoleon and like the alliances going on between France and other countries. So it's like he kept showing up. So I guess he was a little bit more memorable because it was clear he wasn't in favor of Napoleon. But like he was one of the, like for some reason he stood out in my mind because he kept showing up for some reason.
Yeah.
And like everyone else, I mean, there's like a lot of other characters who probably were more prominent and they didn't stand out in my mind.
Right. I mean, so just going off what you said, he did stick out in my mind. I'm really curious to potentially delve into him more because I didn't pick up on the same things you did there. But the other character is Paul Barris, who I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, but he's the one leader who initially supports Napoleon. And then as the battle goes on, and then eventually Napoleon gets exiled, he ends up being one of the ones that's against him when he returns. So it was interesting to see him because he shows up so many times in the overall story, I guess. And then there was Josephine, who was obviously a prominent role in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's him, it's Josephine, and then it's the... diplomat, and that's pretty much the main characters, because you know the leader that he works with initially to rise to power, he ends up trying to depose the Russian leader at that time, the Tsar, was it Nicholas I don't remember. The Tsar at the time is only part of it. The Austrian leader is only part of it for a small period. Like, it's they really do switch out the characters a lot. And then the British general that ends up defeating him also gets only shows up at the very end of the movie. So it's, yeah, there are a lot of characters going on. And maybe that's why I did give it points on this as well, because I thought that they were believable, but it was believable for the short amount of time they had.
Yeah.
Would you say
but that even then, like, a character can show up for a short time and still be memorable? Like, right. I've seen characters who only had like two scenes in a movie, and like, they're like, for some reason, like, heavily memorable, like, for no good reason, otherwise just because they were so clearly developed in their own little scene, and it just, like, they stood out in the audience's mind. So, like, you can have, like, very small cameo characters and still be developed characters. So, yeah. I don't know, like, maybe I'm a little bit more picky on this point, but it just feels like, okay, they could have been more developed, but they weren't, and I just, they all kind of blended in together for me. In my viewing experience, so it's like harder to tell them apart and say who was doing what. So
right. Well, so, and maybe let me draw a comparison here, and then I'd like to revisit The Diplomat, because I think that your point on The Diplomat was interesting. Episode one of Star Wars is not a great movie, I would say. It's of all the Star Wars movies before Disney captured the franchise, Episode 1 was probably the weakest of those six. That being said, Darth Maul is an incredibly memorable character. And probably in regards to a villain, he has a total of probably three scenes that he's in. One of them is a total of 30 seconds long. So he's not that prominent in the movie. But he's also one of the characters that you remember most when you watch that movie. And if anything, one of the big takeaways that you'll get from Star Wars nerds is this amazing villain known as Darth Maul. And I think there's something to be said for a character that can capture that attention with the short amount of time that he has. So
yeah,
I think you're right in regards to creating memorable characters. There needs to be something about them. What would you say, first off, in regards to Darth Maul as a character, and then second off, what would you say in regards to the Diplomat character and what made him stand out in your mind?
So, I mean, when it comes to Darth Maul, I mean, just based on episode one, let's like keep all the excess stuff out of it, shows and whatnot. Sure. As far as the movie itself goes, he is, I mean, first off, he's visually different. I mean, we'll just start off with that because that's the most obvious thing. But also, like, as a character, he is almost like an assassin, where it's like he's very focused on the task at hand. Like, he's given a goal, and he's like, he pursues it to the letter, where it's like, you follow him, you see what he's doing, and it's like, he's very calculated in some regards. He isn't, like, all powerful or anything. He's, like, he clearly fails to take down Qui-Gon on Tatooine. So as a character, it's like, he's got weakness, he's flawed, he's like, he can be beaten, but he's also very focused, very motivated. So like, as a character, and he's also very capable. So it's like, and then obviously at the very end, when he pulls out the double-sided lightsaber and he faces both Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon at the same time, and he's able to hold them both off. So it's like, he's this very skilled warrior. And it's like one of those, like, so it's like, he's all these traits, which, like, okay, put together, he kind of stands out because, like, oh, he's not just some ordinary fighter. He can hold his own.
Right.
And, I mean, obviously he's a fighter, a warrior. I mean, if we're going to the Diplomat, I would say that, like, he's definitely, like, this politically savvy person. Because, like, the first few scenes, he's, like, kind of in the court, I think. Like, in the French court or whatever. I think that's the first time you see him. He can argue his case well. He clearly has, like, things he stands for, but then when you see him in the back rooms, like, talking, it's like he's like being subtle. It's like he's not being overt in his actions. He's like staying up to date on what's going on, but he's also like moving, like, he's being very quiet about his actions. He's not being like out there, like, oh, I'm out in the streets doing stuff. He's working in these back, these dimly lit taverns and whatnot, talking to the right people.
Right. So, which is especially important compared to Napoleon, who is a very maybe upfront character that is seen in the public space all the time. He's very prominent in even the papers and all these other situations where his actions are very front forward versus the diplomat, who is maybe a contrast to that, where he's a little more reserved, a little more sneaky and creative in how he brings about his results. That's interesting. And I don't know that maybe the comparison to Darth Maul, maybe I wasn't trying to compare him. I just thought that he was an interesting character because he had so few scenes.
Yeah. And maybe that is, it's probably not a fair comparison. Like probably should have chosen someone a little less prominent, probably more the diplomatic side of things. I mean, and to be clear, also, the diplomat, I don't know if I'd call the diplomat the villain of the Napoleon story, even though he shows up a lot. Like, he's just the side character who has a thing against Napoleon, but he isn't, like, the main antagonist. He's just, like, gives a full-fledged perspective on the story, what's going on, like, these political things happening. It gives another perspective, more or less.
Right. And I will say, there's a lot of other side characters who are or turn into far bigger enemies of Napoleon than the diplomat does. So it's not even like he's a strong opponent of Napoleon by the end of the movie. But anyways, keep going.
But yeah, like, as far as a character goes, like, he is, and maybe it's because he's surrounded by characters who don't have as much focus, perhaps. Like, they aren't clearly defined in what they stand for, what their goals and ambitions are. And maybe that's it. Like, he's just a character who, like, you know what he wants, kind of know what he wants. You kind of know where he stands. Even the world leaders, like, when he meets with the leaders of, like, Russia and, like, England, sometimes you see these characters, and it's like, it's not clear what their goals are, what they want out of this with Napoleon. Like, what are they trying to do? And it's like, they flip, and it's like, the way the story plays out, it's almost like they flip-flop back and forth, because you're not sure what they want. As the audience, it's like, that's not helpful, because it's like, well, if we knew what they were trying to get out of Napoleon in these meetings, that would help us understand what's happening and perhaps even empathize with them or with Napoleon a little more.
And are you thinking specifically of the Russian leader when you're talking about that?
I wasn't thinking specifically the Russian leader, but he does come to mind. I did think of the Austrian leader as well. Like, because there are several times he meets with leaders in tents and on the battlefield, and it's like, okay.
Sure.
There are several times where he makes, like, there are these political meetings, and it's just not clear what the goal is sometimes in these meetings, like, what the intentions are. So, and maybe they're trying to go for subtle wordplay, like, subtle, like, oh, like, subtle motivations, like political talk, I don't know, but deception, I guess. But I didn't catch that. Like, I didn't catch any of that. Like, what they were, like, what the goal was.
Well, and I mean,
there are a few times, I take that back. There are a few times, like, when Napoleon suggests the marriage to the younger sister, to the Russians. Like, I mean, there are a few times where things like that are suggested. Like, you can pick up. I shouldn't say there's no deception, no, like, subtlety going on. There is some, but it's...
Sure. Right, and that was back then a more common action anyways. Just for the background, he asks for the, what is it, like, daughter's or cousin's hand in marriage or something like that, some relative of the Russian leader.
It's his younger sister.
Right.
Like, one of his younger sisters, like, because the one is already, like, betrothed. And the other is not, but she's, like, young, like 15 or something.
And it sounds like that doesn't even work out. He ends up working with the Austrian.
Well, like, yeah, that's what I said about flip-flop. Sure. It's almost like Napoleon's, like, suggesting, oh, we should have a marriage alliance between Russia and France. And then it doesn't end up happening. Like, there was no point to suggesting that because, like, the whole scene is almost made moot.
Oh, you mean in the movie? Oh, interesting. Yeah, like, why would you waste screen time on asking for the Russian generals? The Russian leader's sister's hand when you're going to marry the Austrian leader's daughter's hand.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a good point. I mean, obviously, like, at that time, it was more common for you to ask for a hand in marriage as a political alliance than in other situations. But, yeah, why they wasted screen time on that, I'm not entirely sure. It was odd, just as a general observation, to see how much time they devoted to, for example, the Russian prince's admiration of Napoleon, only to have him be at odds with him time and time again in this movie as he's fighting him or burning his own city so Napoleon can't take it and things like that. So, yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if you have more to say on that.
Not really. I mean, it's just like, these are the side characters in this movie. It's like, you wish they were more developed. I don't know if I could say much more. I mean, I've kind of said what has been, like, can be said. Like, not enough effort was perhaps expended in writing these characters better, like, in giving them more, like, interesting quirks, traits, and, like, motivations and goals. Like, there just wasn't enough to make these characters, side characters, stand out more.
Sure. Maybe this is a question related to that whole observation, but these are the people that Napoleon is fighting a lot in this movie, right? Would you say that these opponents of his, specifically the villains, are they compelling? Are they not?
I don't know. I mean, I think I gave it middle points on this point as far as the villains go, because one, like, there's so many. It's like so many, like, political opponents. It's hard to say, like, one was more developed or anything like that. And two, as I said, it's not clear what they want from Napoleon sometimes. Like, why are they fighting against him? It's like the goals aren't clear with them. So, at least not in my mind, and why I watched it, I just was like, why are they meeting? What's the point of this?
Yeah, and I think that maybe that touches to just a bigger problem with the movie, in that the main goal, like, what Napoleon's fighting for, isn't entirely clear, even though it shows he's an incredibly ambitious person, right? There's a there's a sense in which there's a third of the movie is devoted to his career in the battlefield, a third of the movie is dedicated to his political career, and a third of the movie is dedicated to his romantic relationship with Josephine, which we haven't even touched on at all so far. But the whole movie is so equally divided that you're not clear what exactly he's fighting for, other than a general ambition, right? So, well, then what is he fighting against, I think, is a fair question to ask. And the enemies on the battlefield are very clear. The enemies in politics change, so it's not as clear. The enemies in his bedroom are probably himself, to be honest. Maybe Josephine, like, it's up for grabs. But, like, overall, you have such a wide variety of enemies that he's facing that it's hard to name one and say, oh, this is what he's fighting in his life. You could, society in general, maybe, if you want to make that argument, you could maybe make that argument, but he's almost fighting for society in most of the movie, as he argues himself. So, because there's no cohesion to his goals, there's no cohesion to his enemy. And that makes it hard to follow what they're even trying to make of this movie. Like, what are you supposed to make of Napoleon after all this, right? You follow his story, and at the end of the day, you go, okay, he's a sad man who rose to power and then lost it all. And a sad man. I gave it some points for this. You know, I thought that there was something about the enemies that he was facing that made it, at least, at the very least, the battle scenes were compelling. And so
the battle scenes are perhaps the best part of this movie.
And so I think that it wasn't that there was nothing to be had from this. It was just that the storyline as a whole was so convoluted that to even say that what he was facing in his life was compelling is very hard, because what was he facing? And I still don't know, because in some ways it was the enemies in Russia in some ways. It was the enemies in Austria in some ways. It was his wife. In some ways, it was himself. In some ways, it was the all of other politicians in the revolution, you know.
In the French court, yeah.
Right. It's just so much going on, and they decided to fit it all into this movie that you have no idea what you're supposed to be focusing on. And I think that speaks to a bad story.
Yeah. I mean, in reality, this movie is like a greatest hits of Napoleon's life is what it is. It's like following his life and saying, like, these are the highlights, like go through a history. Like if they took like a history, like textbook, and like, these are the major things that happened in his life in every area. And like, they decided to put them all in the movie without any rhyme or reason for like story cohesion, like point message, like all that was kind of just like thrown out the window for the sake of focusing on like saying all of it for some reason.
I've heard this breakdown before, and maybe it's worth discussing at this point. Some people say that when you look at a TV show, you could focus on characters and character development, and the storyline becomes somewhat secondary. Versus in a movie, you have to make the plot line primary and the character development secondary, right? This movie, as far as my understanding of it, is that it makes the character primary and the storyline secondary. Based on this movie, do you think that separation of a TV show versus a movie is accurate, or you think that it completely falls in a different category for another reason?
Well, if they're going to go this route for telling everything in his life, they should have gone for like a series, a TV show, because then they could have given characters more development, given like fleshed out certain points of his life, given like more understanding for his key events and whatnot. But yeah, that was what they were going for. Now, if they were going to try to show like actually focus on something, they could have done a good movie on Napoleon if they had focused, say, on like, he could have been an arrogant person and like made the focus like, oh, he's trying to help France, he's trying to lead France, like be into a like to a better age, more or less, like that could have been the goal. And like, even with the French Revolution, they could have like shown that, the contrast to that, like, oh, this is like the time of chaos and darkness, like him trying to bring France out of that into a golden age, like that could have been his focus. But they didn't make that focus. It's about his ambition. Like, I need to gain power. I need to lift myself up. And that could have still worked if you had given motivation for that. Say, showed, like, you just mentioned the first Hunger Games movie. That movie starts off with Snow, Coriolanus Snow, in, like, the dead of winter in Panem, the capital, like, trying to survive on the streets. Like, you're shown where he comes from and what he's rising above. We're not shown that with Napoleon. He's already in the military at the very beginning of the movie. So it's like, we're not shown like any hard childhood, any hard life he came from. None of that's shown for him. So like all the key things I would have looked for to make the story compelling, or to make it like to focus in on a point or like a message or something, like all that is like ignored. Like, all in favor of like glorious battles and an epic figure.
No, I think that's a good point. That's really interesting. Do you, well, I think we've talked about his ideal and what he stands for a lot. I don't want to dwell too much on that. Do you think that the movie is good at throwing the main character from a good situation to a worse situation consistently?
Which part? I mean, we already kind of just agreed that their movie was like three different conflicts going on at the same time. Military wise, he's not really thrown from a bad situation to a worse one. He's always winning. So it's not like, I mean, the battles are interesting. Like, okay, like how he wins each battle is interesting on some regards, but it's not like you're afraid he's going to lose. It's like you're just watching events play out, more or less. And especially if you know your history, you know the final battle, the Battle of Waterloo. You know he's going to lose. So it's like, okay, how is he going to lose this battle compared to everyone, all the others? So, more or less, like, so the military part of the movie, there's not a whole lot of tension, perhaps, for me. I was like, okay, like, it was interesting, and it was and as we said before, the battles are perhaps some of the best parts of this movie. But no tension there, I'd say. Perhaps with the romantic part of his life, which, if I'm just gonna be honest, that part of the movie was kind of weird at times. Like, with just how things were going on. Like, it was definitely a messed up relationship. I hated
that, dude. It was like, so bad. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. There were, like, things happening. I was just like, dude, like, I would not stand for a relationship like this. This is, like, yeah. I don't know, like, how anyone would. Like, this is just weird. And
well, it was the definition of a toxic relationship. Like, He was living a life where he was this ambitious man that wanted all these things. And theoretically, right underneath this circumstance, a modern F-boy would say you could have anyone you want underneath this situation. But he wanted Josephine because they were playing these manipulative games where he would be enraged with her and then he would do whatever she wanted, more or less, mm-hmm. based on his interactions with her, because he was just head over heels for her. And mm-hmm. based on my understanding of history, which, like I said, I'm not a historian, so don't take my word for it. Do your own reading. But it sounds like he was very much attached to Josephine
mm-hmm.
in actuality. So mm-hmm. it's not, I think that's, from my understanding, was portrayed fairly accurately. But yeah, it's really crazy and messed up.
I mean, I guess there's some tension there, but I'll say it was an uncomfortable tension where it's like, there are times you're watching yeah. it and like, you more or less just wanted it to be over. So you're out of the uncomfortable situation. That was more or less my impression. Like, I didn't want to see more of this. I just wanted it to, like, let's move on to the next scene already.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, it's just like the fact that he would be angry at her one scene, and the next scene you see that they're banging and you're just like, oh my gosh, can you not just spring that on me? Like, that's not I do not like that. it was very confusing, to say the least. Did not love that. So I guess, like, the question is, by adding all of that stuff, do you think it added to the movie? Do you think it enhanced the movie?
I mean, it established, I don't know what it did to the movie, honestly. I'm just like, looking back on those scenes, I feel like you could have either, like, hinted at some of these things, or, like, I don't know. Like, you didn't have to show it in full detail. Like, you could have just, like, had, like, more of the subtle conversations going, like, certain conversations, like, hinted at certain things, or showed, like, certain, maybe a few intimate scenes where it's like, okay, showing that the double standards, but maybe showed how, I don't know, maybe how Napoleon was fighting more for her if he really was in those scenes. And maybe, mm-hmm. and maybe showing how she, like, cared about him, maybe, if she did. It is a very strange relationship. Like, of all the movies I've seen, like, this is one of the strangest romance relationships I've ever seen on screen. And I'm not saying that in a good way. I'm like, this is like a romance situation. Like, I could have avoided seeing and I wouldn't have cared. Like, it's just like, okay, this is not like something I wanted to see. This is something I would have rather not seen.
Right. Well, so it's interesting because I saw an analysis of this, and most times I try very hard to avoid analyses before I record this because I want everything to be my own opinions. And that mm-hmm. being said, it was interesting because someone from the cast of the movie was basically saying, oh, he did all these things for Josephine in the movie, and then when that love becomes complicated, more or less, he does everything to spite her. And that mm-hmm. was their takeaway from the movie. And I thought, wow, that's a very interesting takeaway, because that is not the takeaway that I would take away at all from this movie. Because all the way to the end, he is pining for her love. He might hate her at some scenes, but overall, he's still completely infatuated with her. And I don't think that changes throughout the whole movie. So in regards to that analysis, I think they were trying to say some sort of character development of Napoleon through his relationship with her. But that relationship, I would say, regardless of all the scenes that they played out, was developed little to none other than the divorce scene where he slaps her.
And the fact that he keeps seeing her after their divorce. Like, he keeps visiting her and spending time with her, even though they're technically not married anymore.
So if you were trying to make this idea that the character developed post the relationship with Josephine, that's not the case as played out in the movie based on them continuing to see each other. So much for that. I think that's enough to say on both that and heightened tension, unless you want to add to that at all.
No, there's nothing else. I mean, the only other thing I would have said is that the third part, I think we mentioned, was political, like, conflicts, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there's, like, you don't even, I think we already touched on that, though, is, like, it's not clear what people want in those scenes, so there's no tension. Like, if you don't know what's at stake, there's nothing really to be concerned about.
For sure. I mean, I would say all this movie had potential. Like, so many different areas, you could, if you just took that, expanded on it, took the emotional situations for Napoleon, expanded his character, took the emotional scenes with the side characters and expanded on their motives, all these other things, you could have made each of those sections, each of these three sections of the movies could have been its own movie, well-developed in its own right. But the fact that they focused on all three of them and tried to make all of it into one movie made it hard to find any one section compelling. And so the political motivations were not compelling because the characters didn't have time to show why they loved Napoleon and then hated Napoleon, or why the new king was fearful of Napoleon when he was returning back from exile, or any of that kind of stuff. You simply saw it play out as if it was a visual recreation of a textbook, and then it happened. You know, it wasn't something that you could get really excited about unless you dig deep or personally, which draws into question the movie.
It's like the director, what's the director's name? I'm gonna hate myself.
Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott, yeah. It's like Ridley Scott read a textbook on French history and he's like, I want to adapt this into a movie, and they took that textbook word verbatim and made that into a movie.
And this maybe goes
more
back,
maybe more violently than the textbook said.
Right. Well, I don't know. And I imagine war is as bloody as they make it in the movie. So I'm not going to question that. But the bigger thing is that let's compare this to Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, right? Where you said in that one, if I understand correctly, that should have been a documentary as well. Would you say that this should have been, maybe my thought is that this is maybe too documentary-esque and should have been almost changed more for the sake of making a good movie than been so quote-unquote true to the movie or to this original story.
Well, it could have made a good documentary on Napoleon, and I think people have. Like, this is not a new subject. Unlike Killers of the Flower Moon, everyone knows who Napoleon is, as on some level. People have made good documentaries. There probably is some great ones on Napoleon already. So if Ridley Scott wanted to make a documentary, he could have, but there's also potential for a good story as well on the screen. So, I mean, I think in this case, considering his background, he should have focused more on the storytelling part of it. But yeah, I mean, that's my take. He should have cut back on the excess convolutedness of his own story.
Revelations. Did you think there was any big revelations in this movie, or did it have a surprise ending? What did you think?
No.
That was pretty quick. Yeah, I mean, I agree,
we've already spent so much time talking about some of these points. Let's not drag those points out.
Sure. And definitely he didn't transform as a character. Did you think there was a theme in this movie?
Napoleon? I don't know what else you're going to say as far as themes go.
Sure.
Maybe showing like how ambition could bring about someone's downfall, I guess. But I mean, I don't know, because the movie plays with both sides of it. It was like they both idolize him, but they also like make him out to this bad, like rude individual who like twerked off everyone.
Right.
The movie doesn't even seem to know what to think of its own character, like as far as whether to portray him in a positive or negative light sometimes. It's like, okay. So like, it's hard for me to say this movie has a concrete theme. There's definitely takeaways. There are things you could take away from the movie, but I don't know if like they're intentional or not, and if the like then there's definitely nothing that's concrete, like this is the theme, like this is the strong like defining like message of this movie, like there is nothing sure. like that.
And I like to, in my benevolent state, like to try and give it points where I can. I gave it half points on this just because I did think that ambition and the arrogance that came with that was a prevalent theme in that. So it follows the same thing you came to, right? Ambition leads to its own downfall, or arrogance leads to its own downfall. If you wanted to draw a message from that, that I think is a pretty clear message. And it has that message. Whether or not it's well portrayed is up to question, or whether or not the story as a whole is compelling is definitely up to question. But it definitely portrays the idea that ambition doesn't just work. Mm-hmm. And it actually leads to worse problems in the long run. And if you want to review things and see how we reviewed this and got to this idea of arrogance and ambition, check out the 9 points on our website, www.lostplot.com/9 points, the 9 dash points. There you go.
And if you somehow get a review that's 0.99999 in your score somehow, please let us know. We're curious how you got that.
Yeah, that's right. That's
because apparently that's possible.
Yeah, I'll try to fix that. I'm not sure how we got to that. Yeah. But it's there, so anyone can review any movie through that system. And that's how we bring this discussion to you today, is through this system. It's specifically designed to have these discussions about the meaning in the movies, to what makes great characters, to what makes it a compelling, gripping movie. All of that stuff is attempted to be analyzed through this system. So anyways, did the ending leave you satisfied?
Not really. I mean, considering the convoluted nature of this movie, I was bored for stretches of this movie. As I said, the battles were good. There are some takeaways you could take from certain scenes, but it just was drawn out and bland for some parts of it. And I was just did not feel like my time was well used in the theater watching this movie. I just was like,
yeah,
I just watched it as just like, I was just done with the movie when it was the final scene played out. And I guess I just was not satisfied, was not happy. I didn't give it any points here.
Honestly, this is the kind of movie that in some ways destroyed my image of Napoleon in my mind, because every historical account portrays Napoleon as this great man who, even though he lost it all by the end, he is a strong leader who leads his forces to victory time and time again. And he loses once or twice, and especially loses horribly at the end in Waterloo, which they portray in the movie. But overall, he is this great man, despite his political ambitions that sometimes don't go as planned and his romantic ambitions that tie him in a knot. So I think that in some ways it portrayed him, like I said before, it portrays Napoleon as a loser. And that's really disappointing considering how he's portrayed in history as a whole, that he's definitely not a loser and he's actually a great general. So it's kind of sad that this is what the outcome of this movie is. I definitely was dissatisfied. Would I watch this again? No. Would I watch this again if somebody was watching it in their home and I happened to be walking by? I'd watch the battle scenes again, because those were pretty awesome. I love to see the cannons and get the strong Pirates of the Caribbean vibes as you see the cannons shoot backwards from the recoil of the cannonball. You know, I love that. But would I watch this movie for the storyline? No way.
Yep.
And that is it. That's the pod. That's all we got for today. We hope everyone enjoyed this one. We sure did. We will be back next week, as always, for your very own episode of A Lost Plot. We hope to see you back then.